Did COVID affect business?
In a very positive way.
In a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why.
We are, we were in a little sweet spot at the time. We have a small team that is very capable of executing a lot of fabulous work at speed. And people needed to pivot their messaging. So unlike some of the larger agencies in the city, who have a lot of overhead and, you know, lots of employees, we were still small enough that the dollars went a really long way, and more clients needed to do quick turns to packaging, social messaging. And
got it. You know, because I
websites and you know, update their online delivery methods.
Yeah,
and
got it. Yeah,
so. Yeah, I guess so. Because I mean, in my mindset, I'm like, oh man, if you have retail clients, did it affect their budget? But if you think about it, regardless, they had to pivot and they had to do maybe more online marketing campaigns, etc.
Everybody's trying to figure it out. Yep.
Welcome to the DDHD podcast. I'm your co-host Marwan Munamni. I got my co-host
Juice Rochester, Rochester Juice,
and we got a very special guest in the building. Mm-hmm. Very unique guest in the building.
That's right.
As well. She is the managing director and partner of Public Office, who is our gracious sponsor for this beautiful space.
That we get a lot of compliments about this space.
Yeah. Every time we come here, every time there's a guest, they always preach about this place. But let's talk to someone that's actually involved in the business, leading the business as well.
Good idea.
Let's give it up for the one, the only, Lindsay Durney.
Hey.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing, Lindsay?
Okay.
Yeah, you good?
I'm very nervous.
You're gonna be great. We're excited to talk to you.
We're gonna take this clip and then we're gonna pair it with the same clip at the end of our interview, and we're gonna see how nervous you are then.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling by the time we're done, you're gonna be very chill and relaxed.
Yeah, by the time we're done, she's gonna be the host of the show.
We also have tequila in the back, so whatever.
Okay.
Up to you. Up to you.
He can drive home.
He can drive home. You've got to. Are you paying bills yet? No.
No.
No, we're excited to have this conversation with you because, one, we've been wanting to get entrepreneurs through the building and talk to them about their experiences, the business that they have, and really just we're involved in the creative industry. So having a creative agency, we're just so interested in terms of how that functions. So you're the managing director and partner of this of Public Office.
Yes.
And can you explain to the viewers what is Public Office?
Public Office is a creative production agency. We do a lot of different types of creative marketing services for a wide variety of clients in a bunch of different categories.
Nice. And so do you guys do like video production stuff? Like what kind of stuff is it?
We do full campaign work. We do content creation, social media management. We do event and retail activations, pop-ups.
Nice. It works.
Yeah, amazing.
It works.
So when a brand is looking...
Identity.
Nice.
Brand identity, packaging, you name it.
The whole nine. So when a brand has a marketing department, so they've got marketing initiatives that are in play, or they need help to create marketing initiatives, they come to you.
They do.
Amazing. And so you're one of three partners, correct?
Correct. And yes.
So who are they?
Gautier and Kayla Stengel. Kirsten Gautier is the founding member of the team.
Okay.
And Kayla is not here today, but she is the creative director.
Okay, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the managing director, you're more on the business operations?
The business side, yeah. My background is in production. So Kayla, at the onset of Public Office, Kayla was leading all the creative solo, and I was leading all of the production, as I'm a producer by trade.
Okay.
When I had my baby, we hired someone to take over for me and manage all of the production. So when I came back to the business was growing, and I assumed the role of continuing to grow the business and manage all of the operations and oversee all the production.
Amazing. Well, I could see the producer mindset behind you, because it seems like, you know, you're a punctual person. I'm sure when you're on set, everything has to be kind of... Knick-knack, yeah. I mean, you have experiences with producers as well. You know, the producers, you know, they make sure the engine keeps going.
Yeah, they stress so the artist doesn't have to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're the one that takes on all, they're the problem solvers of the shoot.
True.
Right? Yeah.
Would you say the same for your shoots for your
sometimes
clients?
Call the producers the Ronda Realists.
Okay.
What does that mean?
You got to be straight and tell people what it is. Like
the Ronda Real. Oh, you got to keep it real.
Sometimes play bad cop. You know, it's better to just tell people what the reality of a situation is than to tell people what they want to hear, because it doesn't work out for anyone. So to keep things on track and moving smoothly, on budget, on time, you just got to be
got
real.
It. And I'm assuming as Kayla is a creative director, she has all the creative and big ideas, and does it play out where you're like kind of the realist, also meet down the middle of what's realistic that you guys can do within those ideas and what's not?
And within the budget.
Yeah, and within the mostly. Budget. The budget is very important.
The budget just dictates everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you, I mean, for us at least, keeping the budget in mind and making sure we're on track to meet the budget can be a very challenging task in our in
listen
our shoots.
Man, we've been in doing block trade and running this label for about 10 years. I don't think we've ever met a budget on time.
We've been close, a little under,
yeah,
but we've never met it.
Yeah,
so I wanted to ask, like, you know, was it a process managing budgets? Did you have experiences where the budgets were blown out the water and stuff like that?
No. But this is Canada after all. So most brands have regional sort of
budgets.
Nobody's shooting Avengers over here in Canada. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a lot of favors in the creative industry. In
Are you stretching a lot of dollars? Because
always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Getting sponsorships, in kind. Yeah.
Got it. And how did you get into this world? Like, how were you able to become a producer and managing director? Like, what path did you take to get here?
Not a linear.
Okay.
That's for sure. Yeah.
You were good at telling people no from high school or something. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Not even. No. I was always artistic, always coloring, dancing, musical theater.
Okay.
Singing, trying my hand at
dope.
Everything.
Yeah.
Mostly dance still. But I always wanted to be a makeup artist. My parents were like, you know what? You should go to school first and have something else like in your back pocket. So I went to Brock University. I studied popular culture, which is essentially a communications degree. And then I moved to Toronto and went to Complexions Makeup School and fulfilled my dream of becoming a makeup artist. And I did that before social media, which was very challenging to be networking in a big city, and, you know, had a great go at that. Wasn't too fond of a lot of treatment on set, because being a creative person and being able to see sort of all angles of a production, I always wanted to do a little bit more than just makeup or offer an opinion on other things. And it wasn't always encouraged. So I tried to shift gears and found myself in a creative marketing role in the cosmetic department at Holt Renfrew, which was sort of my first step into a more traditional marketing role that kind of bridged the gap of both my love of makeup and communications and marketing.
Dope.
And were you working on, like, when you were a makeup artist, was it like small shoots? Were you working with musicians or brands? Like, what kind of shoots were you doing?
A little bit of everything. Some runway, a lot of creative. So some musicians, some new faces at modeling agencies across the city, brands here and there.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so why the arts? Like, were your parents into arts at all? Did you just stumble upon it by yourself?
My parents are civil servants. My mom is a nurse. My dad is a police officer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So the public service for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Nobody, no creative.
No.
So you're the one that stuck out.
My brother's a welder. Yeah. My other brother works at a hospital.
I'm getting into this right now. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And how did you get into
the middle child? Just the wild card.
So you got into the arts on your own. You got into enjoying doing the makeup industry. Mm-hmm. And then I'm assuming you were a freelancer and then got into Holt Renfrew. And how was that experience going into such a big brand like that?
wild. That was like my first job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was very eye-opening and full-on corporate.
Like world, downtown dressing like a lot up.
Yeah. A lot of those people I'm still really close friends with today. It was a great working environment. I learned so much in a short period of time. Got to touch a lot of the different things, a lot of different personalities. This exposure to really incredible luxury brands.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved on from there and was producing photography, food photography with Fuse Reps in the city.
Okay.
Went on from there to work at Fashion Magazine, which is one of my favorite jobs ever, which was like DDHD.
Hey, was that a goal?
DDHD, right?
Yeah.
You got it.
Was that a goal of yours?
To work in a fashion magazine? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For real, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Like 2.5 years, it was great. I was on the events marketing team, so I was working with a ton of different brands, answering RFPs from the sales team from different brands, like L'Oreal would reach out and we would put together a whole bunch of ideas. I would write all of the ideas, pitch them with the sales team. And then if they bought the idea, then we would execute it. So we would execute all of the advertorials, all of the brand events for fashion, Canadian Family, Wedding Bells, Mariage Quebec. What else? There was five.
Yeah. And was it a, did you,
mostly
did you
fashion.
To go to like fashion events as well in the city and got involved in that through world.
It feels like a movie, like some kind of Devil Wears Prada type.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't though. It was like very
in the best way
environment.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Mm-hmm. I loved that.
And did you get any exposure to like American fashion industry versus Canadian fashion industry to see like, is there a difference or anything
just
like that?
Just in the movies.
Just in the movies?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of like, that's what we see in the movies or?
Yeah, I that's what I saw.
Oh, okay, got it.
I didn't have any exposure to that.
Right.
And so you were in Holt Renfrew for how many years?
Two and a bit.
Yeah. And then afterwards you went to?
Produce food photography.
Food photography. And then the fashion mag for two and a half years. And then why did it end?
Sound like you're having a blast.
Publishing is not the way of the future.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. This was when the internet was kind of taking over publishing and print?
Yeah, it was when the online publications were starting to really exceed the print.
Got it.
And I wanted something a bit more. And I found myself at Jackman Reinvents, which is another agency in the city. And that's where I met my now business partners.
Oh, okay.
Kirsten actually hired me there. She was the executive producer, I guess. Mm. She was leading the production team there, so she hired me as a producer on the team at Jackman, and Kayla was a designer in the
studio. Oh, okay. Coming full circle, I see.
Yes.
And when you got there, were you hired as a producer, you said?
Yeah.
Got it. And that was your first time at an agency at that point?
Yes, and that was also very mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I had never worked at an agency before. I had serviced agencies at Fashion Magazine, but never at an agency. And Jackman is very interesting because it works in retail reinvention. So I had experience in event production and developing different pieces of collateral and to build out an environment, but not an actual retail store. So there was a lot of transferable skills, I guess, but in a very different capacity, and bridging, having just worked with creative and marketing teams and sales teams to now working with management consultants and research teams and strategists was
I don't know what
very
it is.
New.
Every time I hear of and I never worked in an agency, but I always think about like Mad Men. I was thinking about like that boiler room kind of go. You live your life. You spend all your time at the agencies, try to get that client. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, there were a lot of late nights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like it was like kind of a, like a boiler room environment where it's just like you're doing everything you can to get that client. You're overworking yourself. Your life is
that
the agency.
Was other people's jobs, so not
not you,
not me, but there was a lot of like heat in chasing a deadline, not so much chasing a client.
Got it.
In my role, but yeah.
Did you do a good job balancing your work life kind of
no, not there.
Nope. No. We talk about it a lot in terms of like, how do you balance your work and your life, you know? Like, I'm sure it's all over your life.
Yeah, I was thinking about that part of it. Like, how do you find the balance in between all of that?
I think it's a lifelong journey that you have to just continue to keep at the forefront. Mm. And just, yeah. I think after leaving Jackman, I made a very concerted effort to turn my phone off or to not look at my phone after mm-hmm. I left work. So even if I worked late, I was like, okay, anything after this is going to get left for mm-hmm. tomorrow. Yeah.
That takes discipline.
Yeah. But yeah. you also can't be like chilling, watching a show like, at 9 p.m. and like having heart palpitations because you're getting a work yeah. email.
That's
like,
true.
It's not
doesn't
healthy.
Work like that.
No. Yeah. So.
Were your parents good at that as well? Or did you just kind of have the notion yourself?
My parents didn't have cell phones.
No. Like, yeah.
But were they good at like balancing life, you know, between work and
yeah.
family and
yeah,
all of that stuff?
I think so. Yeah.
Just wondering where it might came from, because some people still don't have that in their life.
I think
life,
it's
right?
learned behavior, like mm-hmm. in today's world, to mm. just be constantly going, that like if you don't meet this deadline or you don't respond to this email or this text or something right away, that there's going to be some sort of consequence.
Yep.
And
you don't
there
want
isn't
yeah,
like,
yeah.
and I think that just comes with age, life experience,
yeah.
like
yeah. yeah
things can wait, you know. Yeah. Like you have True. To prioritize yourself and
yeah.
your own, like nobody else is going to prioritize you other yeah. than you. So
and you grew up in Toronto, and from what these guys tell me, in the 2000s, like Toronto was like pretty popping,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially mm-hmm. in like the hip hop era of Toronto.
A lot of good
history
times.
And a lot yeah. of times. So like,
I grew up in Hamilton, enough. But I moved to Toronto when I was in 2004.
Oh, okay, so nice.
Y'all might have been wilded in Toronto, people. Yeah. Man. I partied in Hamilton. It's an experience.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Hamilton's amazing. I didn't know you grew up in Hamilton. To me, at least, every time I'm in Hamilton or I'm driving from Ancaster to Hamilton, I just think of Hocus Pocus,
mm-hmm.
the movie, and like in the right. fall time, because it just reminds me of like Salem and like such a Halloween kind of vibe.
That's but where my parents live, like right in between.
Oh, for real?
Well, they live in Dundas, so it's right in between Ancaster.
Nice.
Like, yeah.
Nice. How was it in comparison to Toronto, you know? Did you like that small town kind of vibe or...
I always felt like there was something bigger out there
Got
for
it.
Me. So like the first time I went to New York, I was just like,
An
there's
awe.
So many things going on here. I can feel it, but we're just walking on this street. Like,
yeah.
I want to go, you know, one of these buildings probably has like a fashion shoot going on right now.
Yeah.
Or somebody's probably recording music over here. Like,
yeah.
I want to be yeah. doing that, not
Got
walking
That's
this
amazing.
Street right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, like, it's so interesting because everything you started doing was on the creative side, right? Felt like just makeup and the arts and all of that stuff. So to trans, and I know as a creative, it's hard to switch to be like, okay, I'm in business mode now and I gotta handle this. And you know, most artists hate responding to emails and you can't get them on their phone and stuff. So what was the transition like for you to like kind of balance that creative side with more of a business aspect?
Yeah.
Was that hard to like
well,
get
I
into that?
I've
or?
Always been a producer. So my art has mostly been in movement. So
right.
like dance. So I don't know. It's a good question. I feel like I'm really nosy and I just always like to know what's going on. So
right.
to reply to emails. And, like,
it's not a big
okay.
deal. It's okay.
Yeah. But I was never really one who wanted to create a business. People.
Right.
would tell me like, oh, you have so many people in your network, like you would be great if you created a business or
mm-hmm.
were a real estate agent or something, because you love talking to people and networking and things. But I don't really love it, and
mm-hmm.
I'm good at it, but I wouldn't say that I love having small talk with people. But
apparently people think you're good at it though, so it's working. But something's working,
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, look where we are. It seems like
yeah,
you know, you're doing well.
But yeah, like I don't know, I just never really thought about business as a career for me,
right.
but the opportunity came with two incredible women that I have so much respect for, and
mm-hmm.
you know, like, how do you say no?
Let's right. talk about those
that.
Women. Let's
so.
Talk about the agency. Like, so you were hired, you were working with them. You know, how did that relationship kind of grow to where it is today?
we all went our different ways after after Jackman, and then we found ourselves back together.
Yeah.
Kayla was working with Kirsten freelance on a couple little things. I was working with Kayla. I was working at Canada Goose at the time, and I hired her to do a few illustrations. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I need to make my next move. Like, what's happening freelance for you? How's that going? How are you finding getting clients for yourself and things? And she was like, let's talk to Kirst. Like, she's starting to think about potentially creating another business. Like, I'm working with her on a couple projects here and there. So I had, I went out for drinks with Kirsten one night, and the two of us just had a chat at a bar, and she was saying everything that I wanted. I was like, this is what I want. She's like, great, that's what I want too. It's like, okay, so yeah.
When it works,
let's just keep this conversation mm-hmm. going. Mm-hmm. And then I just kept checking in with her, and you know, timing just actually happened to align perfectly. She wasn't fully ready yet. I'd had enough of working at my job, and I wanted to just like put a stake in the ground and do something. So it's like, okay, I'm just gonna do it today and just take some time and chill in the summer and figure it out, start putting out some feelers. And the day that I resigned from my role, Kirsten called me that afternoon, and she was like, okay, I just got a space, let's like have a chat, let's do this. And so it all just happened. Like,
got it. So public office timing. Was already there when you're in that transition, or
Kirsten, okay, we got to backtrack.
Got it.
Kirsten is a serial entrepreneur. She actually founded Public Office in 2007.
Okay, maybe? Wow.
As a community print shop that was below two of her other businesses that she owned at the time. So in 2017, she revived Public Office. We had a space in Shaw Street in the Artscape Young Place building. So that was our first studio. So she said, okay, we're going to start. I just secured this space. Come in on Monday or something. So we just started working together. She just started telling me what things were sort of in the hopper, conversations she'd been having. She went out for lunch, met Kayla one day, came back and was like, okay, let's do this, the three of us, except it's just going to be the two of you. I'm going to go work in cannabis. So the three of us are going to be partners. I'm going to go be a CEO or CMO
right
at a cannabis company.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like,
well, okay.
Okay, awesome. This is great. Right. Like, yeah. Why not?
That's amazing.
What? So it was just Kayla and I for the first two years, just at a table, just like the one behind us.
Just back and forth.
Hanging out on laptops, doing all the things, just the two of us.
And trying to get clients. Is that the goal?
Yeah.
You know?
We had some projects coming in from Kirsten and what she had sort of kicked up before she went to work in cannabis. Kayla had some of her freelance clients that got folded into the business. I was just on the phone calling everyone in my network, had a launch party, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. Yes. Just keep growing and growing and growing. So this is the second office or third office? What is it?
This is the second. So we got this space in April of 2020, just before the entire world
changed. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You signed on April 2020 or it started?
No, we signed like an intent to lease document that we weren't sure was actually going to be fully legally binding. So we tried to get out of this space in March, just before we were supposed to.
So the news was already bubbling at that time.
Yeah.
It like Justin Trudeau made the announcement of like, if you are abroad, like come home.
Yeah,
now.
Okay.
By the time we were like, okay, maybe we need to contact our lawyer and make sure that this is actually legally binding, or we could just dip out of this. And they were like,
no.
No.
You're stuck.
You're in it.
And we're you're like, you're okay, in it. Well, all right.
Cancer. If we build it, they will come. Yeah. And so we built it from four walls to what you see today.
Yeah, because it was nothing, right?
It was nothing, no. And like my son was just born. We have photos of him in a carrier on my chest, and Kayla and I in here like, okay, I guess we're
doing. How many employees did you have?
Just taking a walk around, like visually plotting out how we're going to build out the place.
Did you have like a workforce behind you yet, or?
We did. We had 5 employees, I think, at the time. Yeah.
Because you could fit like, what, 20, 30 people in here probably?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the goal. We're building out upstairs.
Okay, nice.
To be another little like kind of war room, boardroom without closed.
Got doors. It.
Open air boardroom, if you will.
Did COVID affect business?
In a very positive way.
In a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why.
We were in a little sweet spot at the time. We have a small team that is very capable of executing a lot of fabulous work at speed. And people needed to pivot their messaging. So unlike some of the larger agencies in the city who have a lot of overhead and, you know, lots of employees, we were still small enough that the dollars went a really long way, and more clients needed to do quick turns to packaging, social messaging, and
got it. You know, because
websites and you know, update their online delivery methods.
Yeah,
and
got it.
Yeah, I guess so. Because I mean, in my mindset, I'm like, oh man, if you have retail clients, did it affect their budget? But if you think about it, regardless, they had to pivot and they had to do maybe more online marketing campaigns, etc.
Everybody's trying to figure it out. Yep.
Let's talk about people and culture, because that's super important. And any growing company or any company that's trying to sustain and kind of endure whatever happens, whether it's COVID, growth, you know, getting smaller, but you guys seem to do a great job at hiring great people, you know, like shout out Ling, shout out Shahira.
Hey. Shout out Ling.
You know, those were
the OG.
Yeah. There's some, and from other employees that I've met here, everybody seems to have a great energy to them. It almost feels like kind of like a family kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys consider that in your hiring? How did you have such a great culture that it is today?
I don't know, like dust our shoulders off, like Kayla and I, because it's just a vibe. Like, I don't know how to explain it. There's no recipe for who's going to work or who's going to not. It's just, I don't know. We just have conversations with people when we're doing interviews, and you just kind of know if it's going to work or not.
Is it just
a bad answer?
Could it be just like you're feeling the vibe of energy. Your relationship? Like,
I think it's more just an energy and understanding the people that we have in place already, and how a lot of those people like Ling, like Shahira, have grown with us over the years are foundational to the business, and everybody actually that works with us plays a really significant role in the ecosystem of deciding who we bring in next, because the employees that we have right now are so near and dear to us that we don't want somebody new to come in and disrupt the flow that we have going on.
You can relate to that, no?
With what?
Just how like, so? You know, having different people come through our doors.
Oh. Yeah.
Mixing up the dynamic.
I was thinking even way back to like when I was managing a kitchen, right? And you're doing the hiring for people on the line, and some resumes are really nice looking and, you know, they're extensive, but you talk to the person and you're like, I don't think any of the other people on this line are going to like this person, no matter how good they are. And, you know, so you really just have to go off of, is this person a right fit for this place? And trust your gut. Obviously, look at the resume and look at what they're doing, but also trust your gut. And hopefully that'll lead you to have good employees, because you never really know. It's a 50-50 shot.
Yeah. And you kind of know right away. Like, I don't know if it's easier to do interviews like over Zoom and stuff now or in person. We used to have people in person.
Yeah. You just got used to Zoom.
But you just kind of know like right away, like what the conversation, how the conversation starts, if it's going to work or not.
Mm-hmm. What happens when there's a person that you think is going to be a great fit and they come in and you're like, this person is a little toxic for our culture. You know, have you had that happen?
No, we haven't had like toxic vibes. We've had a few people that have come in and it hasn't been the best fit, but I wouldn't say toxic.
Cool.
So, and yes. It's just a conversation.
I'm big up on you guys being able to kind of consistently hire good people and place them here.
We've been very fortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's I want to talk a little bit about in terms of like office politics almost, because I mean I've been in the corporate world for a while, and you know, navigating through people that might not be the nicest, you know, in the office environment, or they are out to get you, or they're trying to undermine you to kick you out.
Where is this going?
Well, no, I mean, you've gone through. No, you can talk about your experience at Public or your previous experience at different companies, but have you come across those situations, and how did you be able to navigate through them? Because sometimes you don't know how to handle them.
They're hard. Hard conversations are hard for everyone, I think. I don't know. You can just do the best you can and be as true to yourself, I think, and respectful, I think, is one of the best ways to approach a difficult conversation, that nobody's necessarily right or wrong. It's again, just a conversation to course correct behaviors, or at least for somebody else maybe to understand your perspective and have a dialogue about it. I think again, we're very fortunate at Public Office that difficult conversations are had, but they're met with grace and care and respect for everyone. And I think from my perspective, there's a reciprocal respect that happens between the deliverer and the receiver.
Right.
Deliverer.
Got
receiver.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And I think we're very fair employers. So we're open to receiving feedback from a performance perspective, from a leadership perspective. Mm-hmm. Like we're down. And I think that our employees also feel like they can come and talk to us about anything.
Okay,
and
nice.
I think we often get ahead of some of those conversations as well by making them feel like the door is open. So whether they feel comfortable to approach about a situation or not, we kind of give them the lead to say, like, if you want to talk about this, like,
the door is open.
We understand that there might be a conversation that needs to happen. And oftentimes they'll take it, at least maybe even just to hear us out.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I feel like that works better. It's just a better working environment, right? If you always feel like your voice will never be heard, you know, and you have not even disagreements, but maybe you have different ways of trying to do things, you know, stuff that might help the company, but you're not going to be as approachable to a boss that doesn't feel like they want to hear you. You know, so I think open door, it gets kind of crazy because, you know, people start taking advantage of that if they feel like they could talk to you about anything you know, but I feel like just having an open door policy where all voices can be heard can only make your business grow better.
Yeah, that's what we strive for. We want everybody's input. You know, there are certain conversations that have to happen between the partners on what, you know, shape the business is taking, but we're definitely open to hearing ideas from people.
Nice.
Well, we all know hindsight is 20/20, right? Sure. Now that, you know, you're a successful professional, you know, could you tell us like anything that you might have done differently to get to this point, or just stuff anybody who wants to own a business would learn from maybe mistakes or things you've done differently in the past?
I don't know. I think it's all dues. I think it's all sort of built on itself. And like I said before, just divine timing. It all kind of came together as a serendipitous moment. And I definitely believe that in the power of the universe. So right place, right time. And
when it doesn't happen?
When what?
When that serendipitous moment, I mean, you've had a lot of them, but it can't be every day.
Well, you just kind of have to keep going. Like, you know, I wasn't super satisfied in all of the jobs along the way, but, you know, with hindsight in 2020, they were all building me up to where I am now. So, you know, you endure.
You endure.
True. Then, it might, what you might be doing today, you might not feel is serving a purpose right now, but it might be serving a purpose in the future that you learn from, is what I'm gathering.
Yeah, public office has taught me so much. I've grown so much, like personally, professionally, like as a mom. Like it's like the best work-life balance we've created for ourselves from the very beginning. Like everything that we wanted in our careers, we've made for ourselves now. Got here. It. Yeah.
How about the growth of the company? You know, you guys seem like you're growing steadily, but like pretty fast as well. From if you look at like where you were 3 years ago or 5 years ago, how important are relationships in this business? Does it take a big piece of it?
Yeah, they're everything.
And how do you find fostering those relationships? You know, like
honesty, being natural, human connections, I think is always essential.
Yeah, it seems like in the creative industry as a whole, relationships are super key, you know, in your career and all of our careers.
The reason I have a career right now is because of my relationships. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's what kept me going through all this. And yeah, you don't try your best not to burn bridges throughout them, you know. Sometimes it's unavoidable, but you do your part, right? To make sure that you can maintain certain relationships, because, you know, they say it all the time, the same people you see going up is the same ones you're gonna see going down, right? And so I completely agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think like finding some way to connect with someone on a more emotional level, I think is always good too, to gain trust.
Yeah, well, speaking on trust, like you seem like you're a very kind of straightforward and honest human being, and it seems like you have sometimes very honest conversations, whether it's with your coworkers, your clients, etc. Do you find it's a differentiator in this industry? Because I mean, for us, we found a lot of BSers out there, so do you find it's helpful to be as honest as
I
you
think
are?
There's a lot of people that really value telling them directly what or how far their budget is going to go, what their aspirations are, and what you can actually achieve. I think being honest with what you can deliver is the only way that the relationship is going to be maintained. If you tell someone something that they want to hear and you don't deliver, then they can't trust you.
They can't trust you, yeah.
I wouldn't trust somebody that did that to me.
So. Yeah, mm-hmm. Over-promising is...
Under-delivering is no bueno.
Yeah, no, it's no bueno at all. So, I mean, fostering those relationships in an honest way seems to be very important in public offices' kind of mission statement, as you would say, like who you guys are and what you're about. I also found it very interesting, at least for me, that the three partners in this business are all women, you know? I remember meeting Ling and talking to her about her job, and you know, she took to kind of slightly quote, she's like, I work at a great company. My bosses are boss SBs, you know, like they're great. And they look up to you, it seems like. So it was that different in the landscape of your industry, being a woman sent kind of leadership in this agency?
So. Yeah. We originally kind of leaned into it and then we're like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Like it shouldn't matter. It's a business and people want to. Some people will maybe gravitate to a female-led business or not, but I think we're in the business of doing good work and having good people behind us, and
Was it any challenging when you guys were coming up, when you were younger and coming up in the industry? Okay. Was it male-centric, you know?
Duh.
Yeah.
Even a question?
Yeah, I'm just curious, you know, because how were you able to navigate that? Was it tough navigating through that?
Yes.
Yeah. And did you have like maybe leadership that maybe were kind of hindering your opportunities, or did you find other colleagues that were hindering your opportunities?
I've also been fortunate to have a lot of female leaders.
Yeah.
So to learn from other female leaders in the industry has been a privilege. Sometimes not easy, but still a privilege, mm-hmm. That, you know, I've been able to model or adapt my own leadership style. Got away it. From.
Perhaps. Nice.
But yeah, I think like we could be here talking about the patriarchy forever.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Cool. And well, it seems like public office doesn't have that. You also don't seem very bureaucratic in your company.
No, not at all. I think that's one thing that really differentiates public office.
Well done.
And yeah, is that we are not bureaucratic. We get shit done. We're true to our word, and we maintain really great relationships with our clients, and it's truly a partnership with our clients. So they're part of the big family, as you mentioned, with
nice.
Our employees.
So yeah. That's why public office should be their first choice when they're looking at the Always. Next agency they're yeah. going to hire. And what's the plans like in terms of, are you guys just want to keep growing the business?
Yeah, yeah. We're on a major growth path. We've been, you know, steady growing over the last 6 years, and we're making some back end sort of operational tweaks mm-hmm. Along the way, and just gonna continue to propel forward, making new relationships, fostering legacy relationships.
Yeah.
And yeah, expanding more, not really expanding our offering. We're more narrowing in on what our core capabilities are, mm-hmm. so that we're really getting behind our niche and what we love to do and what we're good at. And it's really honoring the craft mm-hmm. of production.
Got it. And it seems so. Super important to have partners you trust and that you can grow with. And it seems like you've got a great partnership with.
Oh, the partnership yeah. is like.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's truly one in a million. I think the three of us have heard it from many different leaders and consultants that have come through these doors in the last while, that they really respect the relationship that the three of us have with each other, and that it's often not the case when there's a partnership or more than one partner involved in a business. And we're very fortunate. And again, that whole notion of trust, we trust each other implicitly, and we are all ears at each other's ideas, and it just works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have tough conversations with your partners?
Of course. Yeah. But they're always from a place of love and respect, and there's no bad vibes ever.
No animosity.
We just have it and move on.
Mm-hmm. Is that a key to a successful partnership?
I think so. Yeah. And you know, the three of us were not best friends beforehand. I think like family and friends are often difficult to go into relationship in a business relationship with.
Yeah.
We were friends, but we were like and enjoy each other, but we didn't know all the details of each other's lives. We're definitely closer in terms of our friendship with each other now, but I think that's also key, and that's one thing that Kirsten said to us at the beginning too, is that Kayla and I were friends, but we weren't best friends, so it was like it was perfect.
It was
and
good.
Now we miss each other when we go on vacation.
That's awesome.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask also, because I'm always curious, when someone's life's change and in their career, how does it affect it? Did you find that becoming a mother helped you in your being an entrepreneur? Do you find that it ever relates or connects?
Yeah. So I did a caregiver and kid yoga class when he was tiny, just before COVID. They actually announced that like COVID was maybe going to be a thing at the beginning of the class. And they went around and asked everyone in the room, what was your superpower after becoming a parent? And I said, patience. Because as a producer, you're always like moving. And it's hard to stay patient because you're always five steps ahead of whatever's happening in the moment, right? Yep. And I still think that patience today is that superpower that is not only in my personal life, but has filtered into my professional life, that everything can take a beat and just like you don't have to be so reactive or so impulsive all the time, that What is it? Fitzroy Gordon from the OG. Yeah. Patience is not only a virtue, it is a necessity. I say that to him all the time.
That's right.
Patience.
Patience.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Goes a long way.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You wanna...
It's a struggle, but you just have to keep reminding yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm there with you.
It's not only a virtue, it is a necessity.
It's a life journey, learning how to be very patient. I'm usually a very patient human being. I learn a lot from Juice. When he's on his calls about his career and, you know, you've got 7 different people kind of ringing on your ear, but he's always kind of able to keep it cool, calm and collective. And it takes a lot. It takes a lot. You have to check your ego a lot of times.
Just buy a punching bag, put it in your basement.
Is that your secret?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
No, I'm kidding.
But what do you do? Like, do you meditate? Do you do,
I do.
Yoga? Like,
I
how
do.
Do you maintain the calm?
You mentioned this earlier about just like kind of not making excuses and just enduring and just going, right? So I try and look at things from more of a macro sense, right, than the individual problem, right? So I will, if I have an argument or a disagreement with somebody's on my team or things aren't going my way, or I put out a song and it doesn't work, all any little difficulties like that, I just try and remember, like, it's a journey, man. You know what I'm saying? This is just one thing that didn't go right today. Tomorrow, and it's happened in my life where something just good pops out of nowhere that I didn't see coming. But because I was just kept on working and kept going, the opportunities came. So it's just always a reminder, like, yo, bad days are gonna happen, but it's not the end. It's just one part of the story, you know? And when you look at like, yo, this is gonna be my documentary or whatever it is when my whole life is up, you need things like that. They make you stronger. They make you better. So whenever I get in disagreements, I can look at it from that perspective and say, okay, this is just one part of it, but it's not the end of it, no matter how dire it feels.
Meditation. Key. It seems like, do you meditate?
Not lately? No.
I find it super challenging, but yeah.
Yeah, you can't, man.
I can't.
Meditation is just a way for me to like not get overwhelmed with things, right? Sometimes I get to a point where it's like, yo, you think about all the things you have to do and it keeps you up at night, right? I feel like that thing of not being able to balance it or put it away, you know? I get that. So with meditation, it actually just kind of subliminally puts everything in its little box for me, you know? So I'm able to face the day. It just helps me out.
No?
Yeah.
You want to do our wrap-up question?
Yeah, yeah. First of all, thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
No,
see, very relaxed.
Wasn't so bad. Yeah, look at you. Like this,
chilling out,
back.
Right?
Look where you are now.
Hey. I told you. Yeah, chilling. So our community and our podcast, Dreams Will Have Deadlines, is all about helping people get through those tough times, peaks and valleys, right? So I would just want to ask you if you could talk to the people in our community and let them know why you think dreams don't have deadlines.
Because you got to keep hustling. Just keep going every single day. Like every day brings a new adventure and a new door will open. Just keep your head up, be patient, and go for it.
That's great.
I love it.
Do it.
I love
it. Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
No excuses. Do it.
And go for it.
Absolutely.
That's
it.
Yeah.
Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day.
Thank you.
For gracing us with your presence.
Thank you.
This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. You did great. I thought it was amazing. I'm excited for everybody in your network and community that are going to check it out, as well as our audience.
Next time we're going to get really personal, though, so
very,
I hope ready for that.
Very personal.
Okay, but not about work.
Only about your personal life. But thank you so much. This is the Dreams Don't Have Deadlines podcast. I'm your co-host, Marwan Menomini. I got
Juice Rochester Juice.
And a very special guest.
Lindsay.
Hey! That was great.
Lindsay.
I feel like you're holding back, though. You're like,
holding back what?
Yeah, you're
doing. Yeah, you definitely. You hold back
like
a lot.
Work hard and I handle my business. Look up in the sky, whole squad, let's get it. No limit, no.